if anyone remembers, there was a lot of competitions on in Australia in like the early, like late 90s, early 2000s. And there was a really great group of really super talented longboard surfers here that I love spending time with and learning from. But I always felt a bit goofy, I guess you can say, when I was riding these like more high performance competition based longboards. And when I went to California and picked up a heavy single fin longboard for the first time, I just felt like, wow, I'd been missing out on this my whole life.
Hello, longboard community. Tupi Cabrera here with another episode of the Longboardarian podcast, episode 10. I hope this episode finds you well. I know there's a lot of concern within California and with our neighbors in Oregon in regards to the fires. My best wishes, positive vibes to all of you. In this episode, we're going to talk again with an Australian. I've been on a kind of a Australian roll. It started with Josh Constable, and then Bo Young, and now we're going to be talking with our special guest, another special guest. Her name is going to be mentioned at the end of this intro. So, before we go there, let me remind you that this podcast is listener supported. You can always contribute to my podcast and my other media outlet content that's longboard oriented, longboard themed, by either going to my Ko-fi account. And it's very easy. You just go to www.ko-fi.com, and Ko-fi would be ko-fi.com. Once there, you search for Longboardarian, and they make it really easy to give a donation. Donations start at $3, and all of your donations go towards the production of my podcast, my YouTube videos. Check me out if you haven't yet on YouTube. The Longboardarian channel is there. I'm also seeking to establish a different avenue of income. And if any of you are interested in sponsoring the show, perhaps being an associate in regards to affiliate marketing, let me know. You can always DM me on my Instagram, Longboardarian. I want to thank the people that have donated through Ko-fi. Thank you so much. It means so much to me. Other ways to support the podcast, you can always help me out by giving ratings and feedback on whichever platform you're using to listen to my episodes. Quick news report. I hear some talk about a longboarding special event by the WSL Longboard Tour, and it looks like they're going to be using the Kelly Surf Ranch. So that's pretty exciting. It's my understanding that Kevin Scarvana and Honolulu Blumfield and other top names will be participating in this special event. Talking about sponsors, I want to promote my sponsor of the show, Mr. Matt Colo. Matt Colo is a surf photographer, and his specialty is water photography. He's one of those photographers that suits up with those thick layers of wetsuit and goes in the water and shoots away. I'm really enjoying his work. He puts a lot of time in post-production of his pictures. So he works with Photoshop and different software to make those pictures look crisp and sharp. And as a sponsor, he's offering all of you guys a special offer that's going to expire on October 31st. And this offer is for water photography. Again, water photography, not from the outside, but from in the water. And it's $150 for 1 hour and a half of his services, and that includes you and two of your best friends, your mother-in-law, your grandpa, whoever you want it to be, your neighbor. It's you and two other people, and he'll offer that 1 hour and a half with editing of the 10 best photos. So he's going to sit in his desk and work on the 10 best photos and give them to you. So that's included in the offer. And there is a distance limitation to that pricing. So that is for Southern California from Ventura to South Bay. If it's anywhere farther than that, you can always communicate with Matt and you guys can talk about perhaps a stipend of gas and whatnot. So check him out. His website is www.mattkolo.com. And he's also on Instagram. Check out his work. You'll see what I'm talking about on Instagram at Matt Kolo. MattKolo. Also, I've been forgetting for the last 6 episodes to thank the young ladies that composed the official theme of the Lombardarian podcast, the Iligan sisters, with their song Stokey Feels. I want to give a big shout out to them. Thank you so much for that song. Every time I edit a new episode, I just love listening to that tune. It makes me want to go surf. It makes me proud of being a longboarder. That's Anna Lee and Malia Iligan. Thank you so much. Okay, guys, let's go. Let's talk about this episode. A goodie, surf history goodie, surf longboard history goodie. This guest that you're about to hear, she's from Australia. She's actually a proud Australian. She is a mother. She is a Patagonia ambassador, or should I say Patagonia? I just said it in Spanish for Patagonia, not Patagonia ambassador. She was the Australian Pro Longboard Surf Circuit champion in 2000. She placed third in the World Longboard Championship in 2000. She is a very, very active environmentalist in her areas of Australia. She was the first female surfer featured on the cover of Surfer's Journal. She's been featured in various movies, including Sprout, Deer and Yonder, Come Hell or High Water, and others. In my opinion, she is a longboarding stylist, world-class, supreme longboarding stylist. In this topic, we're going to talk about her introduction to traditional longboarding. It's a very interesting story. I learned a lot from that particular timeline in her life. We're going to talk about California longboard surf culture compared to the Australian longboard surf culture from when she started. Australian influences, women surfing. We're going to be talking about surf films. We have a series of great listeners' questions. We're going to talk about her environmental activism. We're going to talk about surfboard design in regards to what she is writing at this moment and many other topics. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to welcome and I hope you enjoy, and I have no doubt that you will, Belinda Bags. Enjoy. Belinda Bags, good day to you. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great, especially now that I'm sitting with one of those longboard surfers that I remember from maybe 20 years ago that always caught my eye. I always thought
Your longboarding was beautiful, and I'm honored to be sitting down with you and talk some longboarding.
Oh, that's so nice for you to say. I'm really, really happy to be talking about longboarding. I think it's something that I've been so passionate about for so long, and don't often surround myself daily with a lot of longboarders. So it's great to be able to sit down and really, really have a chat about the things that matter.
Cool. Awesome. It's my understanding you were surfing just before this interview, huh?
I was. I'm sitting here talking to you nice and salty right now.
Where were you surfing?
Just out off Yamba on the Australian New South Wales coast.
Okay. Just
pretty in small.
In relation to Noosa, let's start with that. In relation to Noosa, is that far away? Where is that?
It's probably about 4 or 5 hours drive south.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's the east side.
It is the east side, yeah. Still quite warm though, beautiful blue water. All the things a surfer wants.
Okay, cool. In a nutshell, who is Belinda Baggs?
Well, I guess I'm a mother, I'm surf addicted, and I'm a pretty passionate environmentalist. They're probably the three main things that I'd like to sort of say about myself, and really just surf addicted.
Okay.
I think I've been driven by that my entire life.
Okay. That's not a bad addiction necessarily.
No.
Now, just for context for our listeners that already know your name, and there might be also listeners that do not know your name, where were you born and raised?
I was born in Newcastle, Australia. Raised there my whole childhood and through my teens, and when I finished school and got my driver's license and freedom to roam, I left there and was constantly on the hunt for, you know, grass is always greener, and sort of lived a lot of different destinations along the Australian southern and east coast, looking for, I guess, the perfect longboard wave, and really just trying to find that place that I fit in. My dad taught me how to surf, so I pretty much grew up with the surfing lifestyle, and really embracing the culture of surfing and particularly longboarding, and learned how to ride a heavy single fin when I went to California in about 2000, I think it was, and really just felt that it fitted with the type of surfing that I wanted to do, and really, I guess, embraced my personality and who I was as a human, and really allowed me to grow and flourish as a person, and haven't really looked back since. Being a surf-obsessed Grom.
Okay. So in which surfing community did you really begin surfing as an addiction, as a passion?
I'd say probably when I learned to longboard when I was in Malibu. I remember spending like about 10 hours a day in my wetsuit in and out of the beach at First Point, and then back up on the sand eating food but not getting out of my wetsuit just in case it turned back on. I had to get back out there.
Okay.
I'd say that's when my addiction really came into fruition.
So you're saying that you became passionate and addicted to surfing in the United States, not in Australia?
Yeah, I mean, I always, like I said, my dad taught me how to surf, and I always really loved it and spent a lot of time in the water surfing, and probably also competing a little bit, doing, like, I don't know if anyone remembers, there was a lot of competitions on in Australia in like the early, like late 90s, early 2000s, and there was a really great group of really super talented longboard surfers here that I love spending time with and learning from. But I always felt a bit goofy, I guess you can say, when I was riding these like more high performance competition based longboards, and when I went to California and picked up a heavy single fin longboard for the first time, I just felt like, wow, I'd been missing out on this my whole life. Like, surfing sort of changed from, I guess, a way to hang out with friends and like a bit of that competitive aspect where I still sort of thought about it as a sport to a passion and a lifestyle and something that I couldn't live without and something that I embraced like within.
Wow.
More so. Okay. So yeah, I felt like that was a really big transition in what surfing meant to me.
So based on what you're telling me, California had a massive impact in your life, in your surfing life.
Yeah, it did actually. I think more so than just like the place where I was at, the types of boards that I was riding and the feelings that I got from those and like the sensations and I guess just like that connection to the energy of the ocean through that equipment was really what did it to me. And I think too as well, like here in Australia, the culture is that we all go to the beach every day. We go for a surf, but then we kind of leave the beach and we go home and we continue with the rest of our day. Whereas when I was in California, I didn't have anything else to do but surf. And okay. So I really settled into that lifestyle that I think is quite predominant in California, where people are at the beach all day. You know, there's people at Malibu that go down all day to the beach, and the same at San Onofre and a lot of those other really classic popular breaks along the coast. And really just got to enjoy that time.
Okay. We're gonna talk more about this specific subject, but just in a minute, because before we go to California longboard culture, I want to talk a little bit about the Australian longboard culture. Something that caught my ear was that you mentioned that you felt kind of goofy surfing in the late 90s in the competitions with the more high pro style longboards, again in Australia. Describe those longboards. Were they 2+1? Were they like the stereotypical hyper longboard? Give me some descriptions here.
Yeah, I guess you could say like a stereotypical high performance longboard. I was riding 2+1s at the time, right on 9 foot. The whole, you know, idea behind it was to try and do big turns and hit the lip and do re-entries. And I just never felt like I quite grasped that, maybe partially due to my strength, maybe my technique just wasn't quite matching. There was obviously moments of glory where I was like, awesome, like I just got to do a bunch of turns and did these re-entries on this left and I feel like I'm killing it and got a quick little nose ride in there. But you know, as a general I guess consensus of my surfing at the time, I just felt like I was always tripping over my own feet and wasn't quite being able to position the board exactly where I wanted to, and just felt a little bit frustrated. But you know, the opposite end of that was that I was having a lot of fun. There were some really great influences at the time in Australian longboarding who were also some great friends, and hanging out with them and kind of experiencing that whole side of it was really, I can't find a better word than just amazing, rewarding and inspiring. And so that was really great to see. But yeah, personally, I just didn't really feel like I fitted at the time. My nickname from my parents and a couple of my friends was Gumby.
Gumby. Oh no, that's not good.
I know, that's quite right.
And your parents gave you that name or used that name?
My dad, yeah.
Oh, horrible, Mr. Bags. Okay, now you mentioned something in this last minute, and I'm going to go there now, which is if I asked you about Australian longboarders from the past that really influenced you, which names would come out of your mind?
Bo Young. Definitely. Jai Burns, Dave Simons, Ian Bell, Jared Morrell, probably the top ones that spring straight to mind. Harley Ingleby was another one. Josh Constable. So I think like within those sort of core group of guys, we were constantly seeing each other. We did live like around the whole east coast of Australia, you know, from Sydney all the way up to Noosa. Dane Wilson was another name of someone who was really inspiring to me. But we'd see each other quite frequently at these contests that were on up and down the coast. And so even though it was competitive, it was also just so much fun and a way to get to surf with them more and learn off them. And I always felt like I was kind of like their little sister that they were pulling under their wing, like, come on, Bindi, we'll help you get out the back today. Or like, you know, hey, we see you doing this turn. It's not quite right. Like, you got to put more strength into it, or do this or do that. And they were also like really pushing limits, I felt, at the time of high performance longboarding. So it was really great to be a small part of that, but just to really witness what was happening and watching them just improve and shred.
I feel like all those names that you mentioned, and I know most of the names that you did mention, are at that time were young people, young men. What about like before them? Like, is there any names before them that might have influenced you, or do you feel like they are a longboard legend, like Australia's Mickey Dora, or Australia's Phil Edwards, or Australia's, you know what I mean? Is there any of such characters that come to mind?
I'd say my dad was probably a really big influence in my early days of surfing.
What's his name?
Phil Baggs.
Okay, Phil Baggs, cool.
And then, you know, beyond that, there was the guys that were like Ray Gleave and Wayne Dean were in that generation before. And then moving beyond that, you obviously, of course, had like Midget Farrelly, the late Bob Brown, and of course the Bob Brown that's still shaping today.
Wow.
And Nat Young as well, obviously, like such an inspiring, amazing longboarder. So I think we've, you know, here in this country, we've had no shortage of amazing longboarders that have been really pushing the limits on longboarding, and particularly performance longboarding, for a long time.
Right on, right on. How do you feel your longboarding has changed in the last 20 years?
Well, it definitely went from that Gumby phase where I then went to California and picked up that heavy single fin longboard for the first time. And I remember paddling out and just watching, you know, a handful of the surfers there, which was Josh Farbro, Dane Peterson, Brittany Leonard, Carla Rowland, all surfing and just being like, I don't know, like just fascinated with what I thought they were feeling and kind of setting my sights on being like, I need to feel that. Like, I need to feel that long nose ride, because I'm seeing the expression on these people's faces and how much fun they're having after each ride. And I like have to experience that. That's my new mission. And so I spent like the summer, I think it was the summer of 2000 or 2001, in a wetsuit on the beach at Malibu. Trying to figure out how I can get to the nose and spend that much time there.
Wow. So you're telling me pretty much that when you had that experience in the summer in Malibu, you had not seen the amount of classic longboarding up to that date. Like, it's not like in Australia you had a sort of similar experience at Noosa or somewhere else where you would see that type of longboarding in bulk. It's you're making it sound like it was in bulk. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, there hadn't really been. I mean, I think at that point I'd seen Jimmy Gamboa had visited Australia before, and I'd watched him ride a couple waves on his log.
Okay.
As well as Tom Wagner had also been out here before.
Yeah.
So I'd seen that,
who is now an Australian wrestler, right?
He now lives in Noosa and still a phenomenal surfer. But I never really, like you said, in bulk, in such a huge influence, being able to witness that type of surfing. And so, yeah, California for me was the first time that I'd really been able to dive deep into what heavy single fin longboarding was at that time in Australia, we'd obviously seen people surfing that way in the past, but it was more in the 60s when, you know, there was like the Nat Young and Midget Farrelly and that whole generation were riding boards from that era of the 60s. And I guess surfing had kind of moved on to a more progressive place for the most part in Australia at that time. And so the only single fin longboarding you were seeing, we were calling old mouths. Like, oh, that guy's out riding an old mouth. Like, wow, that was a 14.5. Like, oh, shame he can't turn it, you know. And kind of disregarding that as a way to surf of the past and not necessarily a way to continue surfing now into the future.
That's an Australian term, the old mal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meaning log.
Meaning pre like 19 or, you know, pre 70s surfboard, like boards that were made before the shortboard revolution kind of took.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Took over.
Okay. So, in regards to that question that I asked you about how your surfing, your longboarding has changed in the last 20 years, let's go in the last 5 years. Do you believe like right now your longboarding has improved in the last 5 years, last 10 years?
I'd say it's altered. I don't know if it's improved, but maybe just changed slightly. I feel like I've maybe just gotten a bit more refined. If anything else, I'm probably not trying to push my ability as much now as I used to. Like I really, when I lived in Noosa and all I did was surf, I was really like going after like, you know, getting a better hang 10 or like trying to do that hang heels. Whereas now I'd say my surfing's, especially my longboarding, I've probably refined it a little bit more, but when the waves aren't great for longboarding, I'm riding different equipment and kind of experimenting and trying to improve a little bit, setting my focus on improving a little bit more on different types of boards, more so than just my longboarding.
What type of longboard are you riding nowadays?
So I ride Sean Nettleton. He's an amazing Australian shaper. I ride his boards. It's a 9. My main one that I have is a 9.3, quite refined single fin. It's got a rounded square tail, which I really, really enjoy riding.
Interesting, rounded square tail. Okay.
Yeah.
What describe the bottom? Is it a very traditional type of bottom where it's rolled, or how would you describe it?
I've got a fair bit of concave in my nose. The board's quite flat, I'd say, with still a little bit of tail kick. Does have a little bit of roll, but not too much. My favorite thing about it probably is the tail that I mentioned. It kind of just has this real swoopy feeling, and I've been able to start to do like drawn out turns on it more so than I ever probably have, like been enjoying that sensation of like a left go right bottom turn, or, you know, like really trying to like put my weight and the little strength that I do have into like a smooth cut back that'll then like position me back up for like a nice in the pocket nose ride.
Nice, nice. I like the word you used, swoopy.
Yeah, I've been watching Sean surf, who is my shaper Sean Nettleton, who's also a phenomenal longboarder in himself, and really noticing these like beautiful like long swoopy turns that he was doing that were just really clean and positioned super well. And I was like, wow, like again, same sort of thing that I got off the inspiration that I gained from surfing in Malibu was like, I really need to feel that because it looks so nice. It must feel good too.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Let's use the date, the year 2000. Yeah. This is when you really became addicted and passionate about longboard surfing, surfing in general. How do you feel women participation within surfing has changed in the last 20 years?
It's grown exponentially, like phenomenal amounts, especially here in Australia, I would say. All over the world particularly. But here in Australia, around 2000, you would see a couple of girls from time to time surfing out along the breaks. But now when you go out at, you know, particularly longboard friendly breaks like Noosa or Byron or down in Victoria where I live now, like the more longboard friendly breaks there, there's more girls out in the water than there is guys, which has been like a huge shift, I would say, definitely. And I'm sure similar things happened in California as well.
And everywhere else.
Yes. There's been, I've traveled quite extensively in the last couple of decades. And, you know, there's been places I've been to that, again, have more girls surfing in them than they do men, that in locations you wouldn't expect. Like the Philippines, I'll be out surfing and there'll be girls outnumbering the guys. And I've had the same experience in South Korea where there's more girls out there than there is guys. So, yeah, definitely I see like a shift, particularly in those longboard friendly locations.
Cool. Cool. You know, I like to add, I've been surfing for a while. And when I started surfing, there was almost no women surfing in Puerto Rico. I'm from Puerto Rico.
Yep.
And I feel like after that Blue Crush movie, we started seeing the first wave of women wanting to go surf, young girls wanting to learn how to surf and become surfers. And I feel like the influence women have had in lineups in Puerto Rico, and I feel like it must be the same in other parts of the world, has been very positive. Like it's mellowed out some testosterone driven behaviors that you would see in many lineups. I feel like having so many women in the lineup just mellowed things out quite a bit. I'm not sure if you would agree with that.
Yeah, I'd say definitely that like a lot of those locations that we've mentioned that are getting frequented by a lot of women surfers have definitely flipped the script. They're more fun, I guess.
Yeah.
You could say like for any, like just they're, it's more lighthearted, you know, less serious, and definitely the vibe in the water is just more fun now. Nobody's taking themselves as serious and sharing more waves and, yeah, it kind of just made surfing in a lot of ways a better place, I guess. More welcome. Yeah.
I want to ask you, women from the past in longboarding that you like to mention that come to your mind?
Brittany Leonard, Carl Roland, Belin. Definitely Belin is up there on my list for sure. There's been so many ladies that I've been able to surf with and learn from that are just been so inspiring, and I think it's been an honor to be sort of part of that realm of surfing as well, and to have been able to learn off those girls. Cassia Meador is obviously as well just an incredible surfer, and then I think as well, like diving back further than that, you know, Rel Sun obviously is like the queen of women surfing, so
yeah, soul surfing almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
To have that you know, influence and guidance to have learnt from and that she has been able to share with the world has really just been such a really great inspiration to be able to draw from.
What about the new generation of women longboarding? Have you seen, I'm assuming many of these young women you have not surfed with, but they are pretty active on social media. Are there particular names that you've seen content of that you like to mention?
Well, I mean, I think the whole new generation of the female longboard girls is just incredible, and they're all shredding and doing some amazing maneuvers. Lola Mingit is an amazing surfer. There's another girl that lives in Noosa now, and she's from America, and I forget her name, but she has such a beautiful
Kate
style.
Hughes?
No. I can check my phone real quick. Sorry. I don't know.
No worries. This is good. This is good. You really want to mention her name, and that's good.
I don't know. She just married Zai, I think.
Somewhere. Oh, yeah.
Nothing's loading.
No worries. She knows who she is.
She knows Hopefully who she is. Yeah. But she has an amazing, beautiful style. And I just think a lot of the girls are really pushing the limits of maneuvers, which is really fantastic to see. Tully, I think it's Tully White from Sydney.
Tully White.
Well. Yeah, she's Tully been White, really yeah. – yeah, I love – I've been able to following her social media. She's got some incredible photos up there and, like, really beautiful photos of her, like, pulling into some little tubes and stuff, which has been great to see.
Cool.
And as well, seeing somebody from Sydney. I'm from Newcastle. It's not too far away. So I'm always like, yeah, Tully, go get him.
Okay. Any other names you'd like to mention?
There's another really amazing surfer that is actually one of my best surfing buddies in Victoria, Sam Sunderman, and she's just an incredible surfer, really talented on all craft, and she's been also like an inspiration for me in the last couple of years. We often will surf together and kind of bounce energy off of one another, like, oh, I watched Sam nose ride through that section. I didn't think you could nose ride through there. I'm going to go nose ride through that now. And yeah, so that's been really incredible to be able to just surf with her and kind of push each other a little bit, like, you know, especially when it's a little bit bigger, like, oh, it's maybe a little bit too big for me today. And like, Sam will be down the beach. And I'm like, okay, well, she's going out. I got to go out now.
Okay, cool. Belinda, I have done a little bit of research on you, and I found that you were the Australian Pro Longboard Surf Circuit champion in 2000, and that in 2000, I guess just when you started getting really into longboarding, you got third in the Women's Longboard Championship. I'm assuming that's ASP. Am I right?
At the time there was only they were down in Costa Rica at uh-huh. Boca Barranca.
So oh, that was the Rabbit Kekai?
Yeah, the Rabbit Kekai ones. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was just one contest for the year. And it was sure were fun times.
And who was the girls that you competed with?
Daisy Shane was there. Desiree DeSoto.
Oh, Desiree, yeah.
Mary Bagalso, Belin, quite a few.
Cassie Meador.
Cassia was there. Yep, Cassia. Who else was there? Summer Romero was there, I think, as well. Okay.
Hawaiian, right?
I think she might have been from California.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But there was a lot of girls would go from all across Australia and from Australia, Hawaii, California were probably the main ones, but I think there was a few European girls that would come over as well. But yeah, it was all one contest at both Boca Barranca in Costa Rica, the Rabbit Kekai, like you said.
I also found on cyberspace that you're the first female surfer featured on the cover of Surfer's Journal. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was right when I moved to Noosa, actually. There's a funny story about that photo, is that First Point Noosa is never empty, and it's always just insanely crowded. I was sitting there with Dane Peterson watching these little perfect waves every 30 minutes come in with nobody on them, and they'd stand up right in front of the rock that if you lost your board in front of that rock, it was going to get destroyed. But I was like, maybe I could go catch some from there. And he was like, yeah, go get some and I'll try and take a couple of photos. It's so close. I should be able to like capture that moment with my lens, you know. I was like, all right, perfect. And a couple stood up, like two or three, and just got some really good nose rides through that section. And that was it. There was the cover.
So wait, it was a Dane Peterson picture.
I was, yeah.
Wow. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
And should we add that Dane Peterson had a special relationship with you?
I'd probably rather not talk about that, if that's okay.
Okay. No more about that. Let's go to the next question.
All right.
I have also information here that you were in several movies. One of these movies, I personally, is one of my favorites. It's called Sprout. What can you tell us about Sprout and your participation in those other great movies like Come Hell or High Water? And I do not know about Deer and Yonder. I'm sorry, but I do know those two.
About that too. Yeah. So Sprout, obviously a Thomas Campbell film.
Exactly.
He'd already made Seedling, and that film had been a favorite of mine that I'd watch, you know, every night after surfing. And kind of felt like I was living in my own little seedling adventure when I moved to Malibu, like watching all the same cast surf and be like, oh my God, it's in real life now. Wow. And got to meet and hang out and become friends with a lot of those characters and surfers. And Thomas was coming to Australia with Devin Howard to shoot. I think Alex Nost was coming and Dane Peterson was already there. I think Tom Wagner as well in Noosa. And I was kind of just a bit of a tag along at the time. I was like, all right, well, I surf Tea Tree every day anyway, so I'm just going to do my usual routine. And now my friends are all here and I get to surf with them and that's awesome. And Thomas was filming the boys surf. And I think just being surf obsessed and being out there all day, eventually he was like, oh, hey, I actually got a couple of good clips of you. Like, maybe we can put them together and, like, include it in the film. And, yeah, I was like, oh, my God. Like, I can't believe I'm going to be in one of Thomas's films.
Yeah.
And then
that's awesome.
put it together and, you know, saw the finished product. And I was just really, I guess, shocked to be considered to be part of one of his amazing films. But also just to be captured in that moment in history as well with such incredible surfers that had been so inspiring to me in the past. So, yeah, really honored to be part of Sprout. And I think my, you know, moment of fame and glory was when the film had just been released and they had the Surfer Poll Awards on and my section got nominated as best sections of a film for female surf film sections. I didn't win, but
okay. Well, I mean, you were nominated.
That's pretty
cool.
Amazing. Yeah.
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 Awesome.
And Deer and Yonder was made a couple of years later by his wife Tiffany, and was put together. It's an all girls surf film, and I think probably one of the best all-girl surf films to ever be created. So, again, really honored to be part of that. And it was just such a beautiful collection of female surfing, both longboarding and shortboarding. So,
what's the name of the director of Deer and Yonder?
Tiffany Campbell, Thomas's wife.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I missed that. And what year did this come out?
It probably would have been about 2004. 5 or 6, maybe something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If anyone, okay, it's a great one to watch if you want to watch some amazing female surfing. So I highly recommend trying to hunt down a copy of it.
Tell us quickly some of that talent in that movie.
I think Rochelle Bellard was in there. Cassia was in there. I think Jen Smith has a couple of waves in there as well. Who else was in there? Ashley Lloyd's in it.
Ashley Lloyd, yeah. Cool.
I think Julie has a couple of waves in there as well. But just some incredible surfers as well as an array of other really great shortboarders too.
Cool. And Come Hell or High Water?
Come Hell or High Water is like the funnest movie of all time.
Okay.
I went to New Zealand with the Malloy brothers. I think it was actually just Keith who was there as well as Jeff Johnson. And we were trying to shoot a small little section of the film. We got really skunked for waves, but we did get a couple of fun sessions in. And then I have a couple of waves in the film from those sessions. And, again, just watching, like, all those amazing body surfers from different parts of Hawaii and just charging such crazy waves to be able to be included in that array of surfers was pretty I felt pretty honored to be included.
Okay, it's my understanding you are a mom and you have a son, right?
I do, yeah. He's 9 now. He just turned 9.
How old is your son? I mean, what's his name?
He's 9 years old and his name's Rayson.
Rayson?
Yep, Rayson.
Okay, Rayson. Yep. So be honest. How many times have you shown Rayson these movies and tell him, this is mama, this is mama?
I actually don't think I have shown him those movies.
How come? He's not into surfing, or?
He's learning, but his attention span with watching surf movies right now is pretty short. So unless he's included in the movie, he generally tends to not last until he gets to my section.
So not even once you've shown him your section. Hey, wait, Rayson, this is mom. Here, check it out.
Yeah, I don't think I have. Maybe I will try that next time. I'll see if he'll sit through it and watch. I think I put him through enough torture of having to watch me in real life on the beach that he's like, oh, I'm not on TV as well.
Okay. Belinda, I was very impressed. I used Instagram to request people that are listeners to the podcast, people that follow me on Instagram, Lombardarian, to ask questions to Belinda Bags. And I was super happy to see the level of engagement that I got. Record breaking. Like, I've had a few guests that I've done the same thing, and I get questions always, but this time I got a lot of questions. So here are a few of them. Are you ready to answer the questions?
I'm ready.
Shoot. Okay, here we go. No Bad Tides asks, and that's their Instagram handle, their Instagram name. What would you be doing now if you never discovered surfing?
I often think about that question myself. And I can never come up with the exact answer because I feel like surfing is and the ocean have really guided my life since I was really young. I would probably say that I would hope I would be some type of marine biologist.
Okay. I think that fits you.
Yeah, because I think when I was at school and I was sort of trying to figure out what I was going to do, I was like, maybe I'll go to university and study marine biology, which at the time I still did surf, and I think that was sort of what drew my interests to that. But I took a gap year to go surfing and always had intention to maybe go back and explore the potential of becoming a marine biologist and studying. And I just never did that. I'm still on my surfing gap year 30 years later.
Wow, what a gap. Okay, let's go to the next question by Sidewalk Surf Distro. Hi, Belinda, they say. What is the lineup vibe like down there compared to other breaks in the world?
I'd say getting waves in Australia is way more competitive than it is in a lot of other places in the world. But you also don't drop in Australia. So whereas like opposite to Malibu, where if you're not getting a wave, eventually you'll just drop in on someone or someone will drop in on you. Here in Australia, you just don't drop in. And if you do, it can get quite aggressive. But if you follow the rules and play by the game, then I'd say more difficult to get waves, but when you get them, they're yours. And for the most part, there's still a lot of locations that you can go to that aren't busy. And you can be out there alone. Like my session this morning was just with a couple of friends, and in between when they've all caught waves and you're sitting out the back, it can be quite eerie where I feel like I'm going to get eaten by a shark.
Oh,
but generally car park vibe, I'd say, is maybe just a little bit more serious than California, but also more wild and free and fun.
So are you saying I want to go further with the question and the answer that you gave? Are you saying that in Australia there's a stronger surf hierarchy, generally speaking, than in California?
I would definitely say that there is a stronger surf hierarchy, and sometimes that's governed by, you know, the elder who's been surfing there for years and years, and other times it might be a bit of a more competitive realm where just the best surfers in the water, the fittest surfers in the water, and the more skilled surfers who can who know where to take off, especially when you are on the point breaks, like up in Noosa or Gold Coast or Byron, or even, you know, if you're at like Winky Pop or Bells down in Victoria, it's just really competitive to get waves, and you definitely do not drop in. Otherwise, you're going to get sent in, or, you know, I haven't really gotten a fist fight, but I've seen it happen many, many times, arguments over waves. Whereas in California, I feel like it's just a little bit more, you know, maybe it's because it's just so much more crowded as well at a lot of breaks, where if you don't get a wave, you have to drop in, or you just don't get one sometimes. But definitely a bit different. I'd say elders are respected a little bit more in the water, and just the general vibe in the water, I'd say, is maybe a little bit more serious. But once you get to the beach, everyone's back to fun times.
Okay. The surfer guy asks, what do you like to do when there is no surf?
I usually am working or taking care of my son. So I work with Patagonia. I work on a lot of their environmental campaigns. So I generally have my head pretty buried in my computer. And I'm also in the process of setting up my own non-for-profit called Surfers for Climate. And so that's been taking up most of my time the last couple of years, is just working on environmental issues. And then if I do have spare time, it's usually playing with my son, where buried in the sand, or pushing him into, you know, tiny peelers on the shore break, or, you know, maybe in the backyard trying to kick a football around if we're at home.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Miss Pena asks, how do you keep up with the activism full time? And do you take time out to recharge?
I feel like I don't keep up, and I'm always scrambling to fit in everything, and try and prioritize things that are like most important and most pressing, and then hope that I can get the rest of the stuff done in my spare in time as it sees fit. And my recharge time luckily is also my surf time. And, as well as, you know, I think that's one of the things that I love so much about surfing, is that it's multi-purpose, it's soul rejuvenating, it's fitness, and it's time to, you know, take out for myself and connect with nature. And so it sort of ticks a lot of boxes. Without surfing, I don't know where I'd be. I'd probably be a mess somewhere.
Okay. Next one. Hector Tito Varela. I actually know this person. He's from Puerto Rico. He's not a person to me. He's my friend. So
nice.
He asks, when are you going to Puerto Rico?
Well, I was hoping that was going to be soon. but now with COVID and all the restrictions that we have in place, I'm not sure. But I would love to come surf with you when I make it out.
Actually, Hector is a very active environmentalist himself.
Oh, great.
And yeah, he's from my hometown, and he's been, I want to say, over 10 years, very active in protecting our coast. When you're ready, Belinda, I'll give you his contact, and maybe he can show you around.
Definitely. Reach out. Maybe we can work on a project together while I'm there.
There we go. Okay, Pepe Retro says, ¿cómo influenció su carrera haber tenido una pareja que también es un pro longboarder?
Translation, please.
How did it influence your career having had a, I don't know if you're going to like this question. If you want to pass, you can pass. How did it influence your career having had a partner that was a pro longboarder?
No, I can answer. I think we never really looked at it as a career at the time. And like, even now, I've never really looked at longboarding as a career. It's just something that I love so much that I was willing to sacrifice having a career in exchange for being able to longboard as much as I possibly could. And I think at the time we set our sights on or I set my sights on surfing as much as possible. That was always my goal, was what can I do in this life that will enable me to surf as much as I possibly can. And luckily there was moments where, you know, I got to go on photo trips, or, you know, had sponsors that were happy to pay for my way, you know, to do shoots, or, you know, in the past to do contests and stuff like that, that just enabled me to see more of the world and surf more breaks and spend as much water time as I possibly could. And in between all that, I always had some, you know, sideline jobs that were never that serious. It was, you know, making coffee or working as a waitress or working in a surf shop, but all that was just aimed at being able to, you know, maintain life in current society and have as much water time as possible.
Okay, cool. Next question. Bobo's Boss 1 asks, how do you deal with crowded spots?
I don't anymore. I just don't go. In the past, I think I spent a lot of time at crowded locations, obviously Surf Malibu. I've lived in Byron for a while. I've also lived in Noosa. And I always found that I would kind of find a little niche in that inside zone. So I'd never really tried to get the set waves. I'd always wait for those inside ones, the medium waves or the wide swingers that sort of would pass by the rest of the crowd, and also try and find gaps. So in a longer point break, especially like ones at Noosa or Byron, you'd find gaps in the crowd. So like there'd be a group of a pack that had kind of paddle all the way out and sit out the back. And then there was another pack that had sit kind of on that next section in. And so I'd always try and sit in the middle of those two groups to pick up the waves. You know, maybe the out the back pack had like fallen on, but I could get on it before I'd hit the next pack. So that was always my tactic. Now I just avoid crowds at all costs, and I very rarely go out anywhere that's crowded. So I'll often find worse waves with nobody on them than surfing high quality waves that are crowded.
Okay, there you go. Next question, Jansen B. Lazaro. He asks, best way to get through a wave using a longboard?
If the section's really steep and kind of hollow and maybe breaking in front of me and I can't make it, I'll often do a little two steps towards the nose, still not on the nose yet, and bend down and like pull up on my rail and just try and like maintain that kind of higher line to be able to shoot through and out the other side. Seems to work quite well on my backside. Front side, obviously just try and like stay quite high. It can sometimes be tricky because you don't really have that like top to bottom ability on a heavy single fin longboard. So just try and hold like quite a high line coming in and through a section.
There we go. Okay. I have a question that you pretty much answered it by default in the beginning of our conversation, but still I want to ask you the question. Mm-hmm. And it's from someone that you might have heard of before, who maybe you can explain what's up with this nickname. It might be an Australian thing.
Okay.
the wax head.
Yeah.
What in the heck is wax head? Why is this a like an Australian good thing or what?
I'm not
what
sure. It's Matt Shinaki.
I don't know. Yeah.
He's a legend.
So anyways, he threw in a question and I really like this question, but in the beginning of our interview, you actually talked about it. Yeah. So here we go. You were the first female in Australia to really adopt the Californian traditional longboard style. How did this happen and what boards were you riding at that time?
So we did discuss my time at Malibu, which was definitely
the answer to that part.
Definitely the answer to that question was just watching everybody and wanting to feel what they were feeling. And then I found when I came back to Australia, my whole world had changed, because when I was on a high performance longboard, I'd spent a lot of my days trying to look for swell, and on the days that it was flat, probably not surfing and doing other things. And when I had came back with a single fin longboard, it was like all those, you know, 1 to 2 foot days that had nobody out were all mine because nobody else wanted them. And I had this magical key that unlocked the door to fun by myself. So I found myself surfing, you know, really tiny Noosa with nobody out. And because I had a board to ride, it was just having an absolute ball. And it kind of, I guess, just continued on from there, was that I love this feeling. And yeah, I got to surf so many sessions alone with nobody out because everybody else thought it was too small. And then what was the second part of that question?
What board were you riding?
I had some Scott Anderson logs that I brought back with me. They were Diamond Tails. Initially I was on Diamond Tails. They were Josh Farbro models, about 9.2 my boards were. And then as the years progressed, a couple of years after that, I started riding, those boards were Pintails, the Josh Farbro models, and then I started riding Diamond Tails around 2004 or 5, which was actually the Dane Peterson model that Scott Anderson was making.
Okay, cool. There you go, Waxit. Next question from Brazil. Our brother from Brazil, Thiago Bulhos, he asks, in the future, in your opinion, who could be the new Belinda Bags?
Well, I think that a lot of those girls are already surfing much better than I do.
That's very
nice. The future, I don't know. There's so hard many to, of those girls.
Hard to surfing. Say, right?
Yeah, they're surfing so good now. It's kind of hard to sort of
pinpoint pick, one.
But maybe Sierra Liebach has already done that. That's Zai. Okay. That's Zai's wife.
That's the American that. Okay, yeah, I have heard that name. Sierra
and she has such a smooth, amazing style that I'll often go through her Instagram page and be like, oh, I have to watch this clip because she's so smooth and so good.
Cool. Okay, and the last question from our listeners, Albert Garcia. He asks, he's from here, from the 805. When I say 805, from my area, Ventura, California. Did you enjoy competing against Cassie and Daisy?
I enjoyed their company, but I never really enjoyed competing. No. I felt that it was really weird to compete against your friends and never quite grasped, I guess, what it required to be a successful competitor in that realm without feeling like it was tearing me up inside. So not just them two specifically, but I just never really enjoyed competing against my friends. Although, you know, the counter side of that is that I loved that the competitions brought us all together and gave us a place to be able to free surf outside of that competition and really be inspired by each other and enjoy fun times in the water. So, yeah, I really did enjoy surfing with them.
Exactly. There was a silver lining.
Exactly.
To competition.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. You know, Belinda, I have many other topics, but we've had such a great conversation that I'm going to leave those other topics for the time that we revisit on another episode down the road. We're reaching the 1 hour mark, so I want to be considerate with your time, and we're going to jump to the 10. The 10 is a segment that I call it a rapid fire segment, and I'm going to throw you a word or a phrase. You come back at me with a word or a phrase. First things that comes to your mind. Okay?
Okay. All right.
Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, let's do it. Malibu or Noosa? And when Noosa. I ask you this, okay, that was quick. I was going to say in the context of surfing. Okay, Noosa.
Noosa.
There we go. Of course. Okay. There's a little bit of bias there, right?
There is. Well, I am Australian, so.
Australian pride. Okay. All expenses paid surf trip to Spain or Morocco?
Morocco. I haven't been to both, but I do really want to go to Morocco.
Okay. You have chosen Morocco.
But Morocco.
You can go afterwards.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. If there was a company that you could make disappear from Earth, what company would it be? And I'm talking in the context of the environment.
That's a tough one between Shell or Chevron and like
two oil giants
and Coke.
Okay. Okay. There we go. Okay. Advice you would give to a parent who is eager that their kid got into surfing?
Advice would be let the kid do it at their own pace.
Okay, there we go.
Don't be pushy.
There we go. Aside from surfing, a sport that you enjoy to watch?
Basketball.
There we go. A Australian that likes basketball. Interesting. I was going to think maybe rugby or football, like in soccer, but okay.
Yeah, basketball.
I know you guys have. I know you guys have a good team, actually. Okay, here we go. Salsa dancing or break dancing?
Ooh, salsa.
Okay, that tells me that you are a traditional longboarder. Okay, that you're more of a stylist.
Okay.
Here we go. Number seven, a fish you like to eat?
I don't eat fish.
Okay, there we go.
Can't answer. No fish for me.
Are you vegan?
Not entirely, but yeah, okay. Pretty much. Plant-based.
Okay, plant-based.
Yeah.
Okay.
A vegan who cheats occasionally, but yeah, plant-based.
Okay. Number eight. This is going to be a fill-in-a-blank type question or whatever. Midget Farley is a blank.
Influence.
Okay. Number nine, the guy or girl that last burned you on a wave is a blank.
Asshole.
Okay, there we go. Number 10, the last one. Classic Aussie surf slang words.
Classic Aussie surf slang words. Barrel-mundi? Getting a barrel?
What?
Maybe that's just with my friends. Maybe that's not, slang.
You said in context.
In context. Okay. Classic Aussie surf slang. I'm blanking. I feel like it's just all normal talk to me now that I can't even decipher what's slang and what's
what's not. What's Australia's? Hey, dude.
How you going?
Okay.
Maybe I'll come back to you on that one.
Okay. No problem. Okay. Hey, Belinda, we're at the end of the interview. This is the time that I like to give my guests an opportunity for a shout out. Anyone that you want. Before we go there, I want you to tell us about your organization that you're very involved in. And I think it's important that you mention what you're doing and what can people do to help out.
So I'm starting off a non-for-profit called Surfers for Climate. We're primarily basing ourselves here in Australia just because it's what we all know best, but we do want to open up international chapters as well. As a surfer, I've just started to see how climate impacts are affecting our everyday waves, as well as our everyday lifestyle, and I want my son to be able to also enjoy this surfing life that I've had the privilege of being able to live. And if we don't act now, our next generation isn't going to be able to have that privilege as we did. And so I think Everybody who's listening, if you wanted to check us out, we're on Instagram right now as Surfers for Climate, all one word. We're about to launch at the end of September, where we'll have a website up, and ways where we can all get on board and help, whether that be in our own personal individual footprint, so making a few small changes that we can all do really easily, as well as the bigger picture things, you know, looking at stopping fossil fuel extractions from happening. We're aiming right now off launch at supporting a few non-for-profits that are working tirelessly on stopping some massive fossil fuel developments happening along our Australian coastline. In the future, we'll be looking at also working with some international organizations who are helping out in other parts of the world.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So now let's go to the shout out. And before we go there, thank you for what you're doing for our environment, because what you're doing over there, I'm sure, has a impact around the planet. So thank you very much. And now the shout out. What shout outs would you like to do?
Since this is a longboard podcast, I would really just want to thank from the bottom of my heart all the people who have been part of my surfing life. You know, a couple of the crew that I mentioned earlier in my younger days of surfing, you know, all the boys that I used to surf with, you guys all know who you are. I often think of you and think that my life would be very different without your inspiration and ability of showing me such fun times as a kid. And then, you know, a lot of the other people that I surf with throughout my years in California, all the people that I've traveled with, the people that I've stayed with and slept on your couch for many weeks on end, that have enabled me to have just the adventurous life and spend the enjoyment and time in the ocean that I have. So I didn't mention any specific names, but I know that if any of you are listening, you will know exactly who you are. And thank you so much.
Okay. Very, very cool, Belinda. It's been a true pleasure to converse longboard surfing, longboard culture. I feel like most of us share the same passion. I should say all of us share the same passion, all of us that have taken longboarding as part of our life. And I felt that in this interview with you. So thank you again. And I wish you the best to you and Raisin and all your projects. And I hope to see you in the water.
Great. Thanks. I hope to get to surf with you soon, one day soon as well. It's great to chat.
One of these days. Okay. Thank you so much.
Shaka to you. Bye.
There you go, people. I hope you enjoyed the episode with Belinda Bags. I sure did, once again. I learned so much about our longboarding history with every single guest that I interview. And I hope you do too. Coming up in the next month, we have potentially a Hawaiian high-profile name of our longboard community. I'm working hard on that. I also have aligned set up an Australian, another Australian, a great surfer, a well-loved person from our community. And we're going to hear more about that. I also am lining up a interview with a Californian from the 90s, early 2000s. A lot of you are going to know who this person is once I release this interview. I'm not going to say any names yet until that interview is completed. Anyways, thank you again. Bless you. And I'll see you in the water. Yeah.